National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Well, in just a few weeks, Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati will be canonized, along with Blessed Carlo Acutis. Frassati is a beloved saint known for his love of Christ and sports, but he's also being called a patron saint of fashion. This week on Register Radio, we're joined by Mary Harper, founder of liturgicalstyle.com and author of the forthcoming book, What the Saints Wore. And then, Register staff writer Jonah McCowan tells us about one powerful use of AI. Saints talking to saints. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, host of Register Radio and EWTN News' vice president and editorial director. I'm here in our Washington, D.C. studios with my co-host, Shannon Mullen, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. Hello, Shannon.
Hello, Matthew. I'm well, thank you.
I know it's the end of the summer, but that also means that we're getting a little closer to the canonizations that people have been waiting for a very long time. In Rome, coming up in just a few days.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming, but people are very excited.
Well, on that point, St. Margaret of Scotland is often honored as the patron saint of fashion, but a new name of saintly patrons for fashion will be canonized on September 7th, Pier Giorgio Frassati. What can his sartorial choices tell us about the faith and holiness? To help us understand a bit more about that, as I mentioned, we're joined by Mary Harper, founder of liturgicalstyle.com and author, again, of the forthcoming book, What the Saints Wore. And she is a contributor to one of our recent articles on Pier Giorgio Frassati, asking the intriguing question, patron saint of fashion, soon to be Saint Pier Giorgio Frassati, dressed for God and not for the world. Well, welcome, Mary.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be on here.
So let's start with a bit about you. What first drew you to the idea of fashion choices for saints?
Absolutely. So I've always loved the stories of the saints. And so since I was in middle school, always reading their stories and always aware of the community of saints being very present to us. They are our friends. They're our big brothers and sisters in heaven. And so as I am the youngest sibling of a Catholic family, I loved borrowing clothes from my sister's closet. And so I kind of saw it as a way that we could pray with the stories of the saints is to even reflect the things that they wore in our own styling of outfits. And style has a lot to communicate about someone's own story, about someone's own testimony. And so looking at a lot of these more modern saints that we have actual photographs of, there's something that we can learn about them and their encounter with Christ through even their own garments.
Yeah, Mary, first of all, I want to say that I'm wearing a tie today, which Matthew can attest is not an everyday thing for me. So maybe Pier Giorgio is already having an impact on us.
And it's a good-looking tie.
Oh, amazing.
So, one thing I wanted to talk about, Mary, a little bit, and Matthew, is this juxtaposition. We have two saints being canonized, Carlo Acutis, along with Pier Frassati, and they're both young. They're both they have a lot of things in common. Style is not one of the things that they share in common. When I think of Carlo Acutis, I think of his big mop of hair. I think of his sneakers, right? The saint in sneakers and his polo shirt. And Pier Frassati has a much more dapper style, right? So
yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the contrast there before we go forward?
Absolutely. And I would actually dare to argue that there's more similarity, mostly because of, you know, Carlo Acutis, he's a millennial, right? And then Pier Giorgio living earlier in the 1900s. And so Pier Giorgio actually went out of his way to try to dress down according to what was appropriate for his time. So he came from a wealthier family, and so did Carlo Acutis. And both of them made the intentional decision to wear that which have been more simple in the serving of the poor or who they're ministering to. So Carlo Acutis, intentionally, he hated wearing a brand. So actually, that polo shirt he's wearing, you'll notice there's not a logo on it. He wanted to try to get away from this idea of, you know, he's wearing his Nikes and his incorrupt burial. But a lot of the time, he preferred to kind of move away from that sense of branding or status. Pier Giorgio, in a similar way, his family gave him a really hard time that he didn't want the new sports jacket or the polishing his shoes. A lot of times, if they gave him something new, he would very quickly hand it off to the next person that came knocking at their door. He would rather wear that which had to be repaired a bunch. So he said, well, it's practical. This is all I need. I don't have to prove my status to someone, because like Christ, I want to be relatable and connect with those whom I'm serving.
Yeah, and yet we have these images of Pier Giorgio where, Shannon, you use the word that everyone does, and he was very dapper. Even when he was hiking in the mountains, there's the photograph of him, again, very dapper in climbing in hiking boots, in these great pants that he was wearing, and of course, the striped shirt. And I know I want to come back to that shirt because I know there's deeper meaning to that. And that's in some ways what I want to ask you, that his wardrobe, is, as you note, reflects both the simplicity, but there's a real sense of purpose.
Yes, absolutely. He was, intentional in everything that he did. I always think about how when Christ would tell us, do not let people know that you're fasting. You know, wash your face, anoint your head. So Pier Giorgio wasn't going about like a bum. You know, he was making sure to dress himself well. And either when he was really suffering physically from even his illness and even his emotional suffering, he was still dressing, intentionally. So people wouldn't have ever known. They would never suspected what he was going through. So I always think of that similar way. He wasn't letting people know what was going on in the interior of his heart, and so always putting forth his best dressed self.
Yeah, when I was reading the piece, which appeared in ncregister.com, and it's going to be in our upcoming print issue, my first thought, we're heading into the football season, right, Mary? And that means football jerseys are going to start sprouting in our masses, which is really unfortunate, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the role of dressing up in our culture today, and especially at Sunday Mass?
Absolutely. So we have a greater opportunity than any other century before to honor God through our garments. So if you think back to the time prior to the 1940s, it was so easy to kind of dress up for mass because honestly, you only had maybe a few garments for women. You maybe had four dresses, right? And in order to dress up for mass, you just put on your nice set of Sunday pearls and you called it a day. Well, as you go towards into the later 1900s, into the 90s and 80s, and athleisure and streetwear, and suddenly fast fashion comes about, and everyone has so many options of things to wear. You know, our closets are stuffed full. So now there has to be, it's not as simple as just putting on some pearls. There has to be a level of, I am putting aside the garments for just ordinary things because I am stepping into the throne room to worship. So there's actually a greater invitation to creativity and intentionality. So it's not as easy as it once was, again, because of this overflow of options. So it's really exciting. There's greater grace there for those that make that intentional decision of, I want to pray through my garments. I want to worship the Lord and remind myself tangibly that I'm entering into the throne room at Mass by dressing up for it, by putting on something beautiful, by putting on something that reminds the world that I'm entering into the presence of truth, beauty, and goodness himself.
But there's also a rich symbolism in the faith, and you make the note that you talk about the blue striped shirt. There's this very famous photo of him, as you put it, smoking a cigar on a snowy slope, and he has this blue striped shirt, and he's in hiking boots and everything else. What is the symbolism for that, and what does it also tell us about his devotion as a Catholic, but his particular devotion to the Blessed Mother?
Absolutely. So I only recently encountered this deeper connection. So it's actually funny. If you trace a lot of photos of modern-day saints, whether it's Blessed Chiaroluce Badano or other saints, you'll see that they're wearing these blue stripes. I was like, oh, that's a funny coincidence. Well, someone brought it to my attention that a lot of the Italian postal workers made the blue stripes famous because of their devotion to Our Lady of the Sea, Stella Maris, the Star of the Sea, and the way to kind of ask for her protection and intercession when they were working in the waters. So blue stripes originated even earlier, typically by French sailors, just because it was for greater visibility if a man went overboard. But again, with the richness of the Catholic faith always penetrating and affecting all areas of her life, it makes sense that catechized Italians would say, oh, blue and white. Well, of course. This is another way that I can remember my mother, Our Lady, looking out for us in all of our work on the seas. So blue stripes became very popular throughout Europe, so it makes sense that you see Pier Giorgio and Carolucci Badano and these other modern-day saints all wearing the blue stripes. But in a way, it's almost like this hidden or innate connection of their devotion to Our Lady.
It's a really intriguing book that you're working on, Mary. Can you tell us what other saints are you focusing on?
So I'm waist deep in my research right now. I probably have over 100 saints I'm researching. Currently today, I was working on Padre Pio, so looking at the different relics we have of his, from his fingerless gloves to his habit, to the undershirts that he wore that are literally stained from the stigmata, and what that can tell us about his story. And of course, everyone from St. Margaret of Scotland to St. Martin de Porres. So it's really trying to get as much broad and far vast research as they can of all these saints. So again, what can their garments tell us about their stories and just remind us again of their relatability? Like, the call of holiness is for all of us.
Yeah, a book like this has to be a lot of fun to be researching. But again, it has a deeper purpose for you as a Catholic and for the reader, I know.
Absolutely. It's been a treasure.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for contributing to our article. You can find it again at Patron Saint of Fashion, soon to be Saint Pier Giorgio Frassati, Dressed for God, Not for the World. And I want to read the little subtitle: that dapper indeed he was, yet his fashion choices point to something deeper. You can find that at ncregister.com. And as Shannon was noting, it'll be in our print edition. Well, Mary, thanks again, and look forward to having you on, especially when your book comes out.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about AI, Magisterium's new project, Saint Chat, with Jonah McCowan. Don't go anywhere. This is Register Radio here on EWTN.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. I'm Matthew Bunsen, your host of Register Radio in Washington, D.C., in our studio with Shannon Mullen, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. Well, obviously, there is a lot of discussion about AI these days, and one of the more intriguing websites that's out there is Magisterium AI. And there's a lot of chatter, too, about their newest project, Saint Chat, that is able to generate text-based responses to questions from, let's be clear, avatars of saints such as St. Paul, St. Augustine, and St. Jerome, and you can actually have them interface with each other. In other words, it's possible for St. Thomas Aquinas to have a debate or a discussion with St. Augustine of Hippo. Is this a good idea, and how is this actually going to play out? To help us understand that a lot better is Jonah McCowan, Register staff writer, and he has a great new piece, Chatting with AI Saints, Opportunity or Peril. Jonah, welcome back to Register Radio.
Thanks so much, Matthew.
Well, I know that this was probably inevitable, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's funny you actually say that, because when I spoke to the CEO of Magisterium, Matthew Harvey Sanders, he said that, basically. He said that if Magisterium didn't create something like this, then another AI company probably would. And actually, in addition to that, he said that a lot of Catholics are actually reaching out to secular AIs, such as ChatGPT, and asking them to impersonate saints. So this is already happening. And so, yes, to your point, there was kind of an aspect of inevitability here that someone would create an AI tool like this.
Jonah, I know you got to sort of give this a test drive, as it were, and there's a great piece in a section of your story where you talk about asking St. Thomas Aquinas's avatar, what would you say about human dignity in a technological age? My child is the response. Though I lived in a time far removed from your technological age, the truth about human dignity remains constant, for it is rooted not in the fleeting advancements of man, but in the eternal wisdom of God. What else can you tell us about your test drive?
Right. So I was shown kind of a video-based demo of what the interface would look like. And people who have used tools like ChatGPT will probably be pretty familiar with how the tool looks. And I should just note that it's not available to the public yet. It'll be made available hopefully later later in September. But it was really interesting. I got to see kind of a simple avatar face of St. Thomas Aquinas. Nothing that crossed into the uncanny valley or anything like that. But it was really interesting. It gave a 4-paragraph reply, and there were kind of little citations sprinkled throughout. So everything that the avatar said, you could click each little citation and see where in the saint's writings it came from. Because one of the interesting things about this tool is that it has been fed all of St. Thomas Aquinas's writings, everything he ever wrote, in addition to other kind of contextual information about the saint, kind of in an attempt to kind of simulate what St. Thomas Aquinas would really speak like, or I guess in this case, what he would type like.
Yeah, so I'm somewhat uncomfortably reminded of, was it Father Justin, the AI priest, that created a bit of a flurry last year, and of course had to be sort of taken down. What's been the reaction to this in these early days?
So as I mentioned, this tool's not available to the public yet, but I did reach out to several Catholic philosophers, Catholic experts, just to kind of get their take on the general concept of, is it a good idea to mm-hmm. simulate what the saints might have spoken like? Because again, many of these saints, all the ones available in the tool are deceased. They have been dead for centuries. So
right.
we can't tell exactly how accurate the simulation is, but this people I spoke to for my piece, the Catholic philosophers and experts, they did express some optimism that this could be helpful for, students and scholars who might be interested in kind of diving into the writings of the saints. And, this could be an interesting way for them to get to know the saints in just kind of a new and interesting way. But of course, they did caution that it's very important that people not be drawn in to, seeking spiritual direction from these saints or something of that nature, because obviously, as Catholics, we know that we cannot seek spiritual direction from a computer. We should be reaching out to these saints through prayer and not actually thinking that we are truly communicating with saints. It's really the Saint Chat tool is supposed to be an educational tool and not something for, spiritual communion or spiritual direction.
Yeah, Matthew, we really haven't talked much about AI amongst the two of us, but your concerns, would they be along those same lines as what some of these experts talked to Jonah about?
Yeah, I would agree. I think we can take as sort of the model for how we want to approach this Pope Francis, who was, as I've said a number of times, really ahead of the curve in recognizing the opportunities, but also the dangers of AI. There's that great document. I know, Jonah, you cited that in your piece, Antiqua et Nova. And Pope Leo XIV has made this one of the major concerns in the early days of his pontificate, this worry about the impact of AI, for example, on the neurological and cognitive development of children. That there is this concern, I'll put it colloquially, that the more we use AI, the dumber we get. That it does actually impact our cognitive ability. And we can look to at the long-term ramifications of the use of AI, even in the field of journalism, where it is replacing reporting. It is replacing the story writing, and not always for the best.
Yeah, and I know, Jonah, you have a couple AI pieces, other pieces in the works, you know, including the real big problem of AI and cheating and in college and high schools and things like that. But you also mentioned in the piece EWTN and others, you know, are regularly portraying saints and drawing on their writings from what we know, but oftentimes in some of these dramatic presentations, it's necessary to kind of fill in the blanks, you know, with some fictional dialogue. What's the difference, do you think, between that, which we're used to, and, you know, these avatars, which is something novel?
Right, absolutely. I mentioned in my piece there's an EWTN TV show called Saints versus Scoundrels that does exactly this. It kind of has, you know, these very deeply researched but fictional dialogues between, for example, Saint Dominic and Simone de Beauvoir or something like that, you know, for rhetorical and for entertainment purposes. So, yeah, to your question, what is the difference between creating that using human minds and, you know, letting a computer generate something like that? And one of the Catholic philosophers that I interviewed made a good point, which is that when humans write philosophical dialogues like that, there's the opportunity for the human to be, you know, fraternally corrected. You know, the church, if something goes wrong or if the dialogue is inaccurate, then, you know, the church can step in and correct the person because they are a person. Whereas if an AI creates something like that, it's like, where's the accountability? You know, you can talk to the person who created the AI, but the AI itself is not a person. You can't fraternally correct a computer. And so, again, to my earlier point, this tool, I think it's quite clear that it's supposed to be used for educational and maybe even entertainment purposes. But it is important to recognize that the AI that is creating these dialogues doesn't have a soul. It is not, it's not human. And so we always have to take what it says with a grain of salt and keep that anthropology in mind.
Yeah, go back to that word again, inevitable. Does it help, and I'd be curious what the experts think about this, to have this sort of under a Catholic umbrella, at least, in terms of informing at least the structure and the ethos of an AI, because obviously everything still has to be programmed, doesn't it?
Yes, and I think my personal opinion would be yes. I think it's great that Catholics have an option if they really want to use AI, or they feel that it's inevitable that they should or will do so. I think it's great for them to have an AI option that is fed only with Catholic sources, because some people might know this, some people might not, but many secular AI chatbots are basically fed on whatever's out there on the internet. That might be 130,000 movie scripts, for example. Well, if you're basing your entire worldview on 130,000 movie scripts, that's not going to necessarily give you the best Catholic answers. Whereas the creators of this AI, you know, and it's still being tested in the field, so it's not perfect, obviously. But what they've tried to do is feed the computer only Catholic sources and try as best they can to get the computer to understand what it means to have a Catholic worldview. So it's a really interesting project. People will have valid criticisms of it, but my personal opinion, and I think the opinion of several of the people I interviewed, is that this is a very interesting and worthwhile project, especially as so many other secular AI systems are just kind of going crazy out there. There's a lot of kind of breakneck pace in the AI world, and having a Catholic option is probably a good thing.
Yeah, and to go back to Pope Leo XIV, this idea of making sure that we have proper ethics and proper boundaries in the use of AI. Well, Jonah, I hope you'll come back after we're all able to take a spin with this new program, because I think there's going to be a lot to talk about.
Yes, absolutely. I'd be happy to.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us this week here on Register Radio. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Once again, thanks so much for joining us here on Register Radio, here on EWTN. Until next week, on behalf of our producer, Michael McCall, and Shannon Mullen, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Take care, and God bless.